Many of us have been so touchy that even casual reference to spiritual things, not religious, made us bristle, and that's ready to fight back or hostile, or to fight back, made us bristle with antagonism, that's hostile. This sort of thinking had, not should, could, ought to be abandoned. Once again, old ideas replaced with new ones. Okay. Though some of us resisted, we found no great difficulty in casting aside such feelings. Faced with alcoholic destruction, step one, we soon became open-minded on spiritual matters, step two, as we've been on other questions. In this respect, alcohol was a great persuader. It finally beat us into a state of reasonableness. I say it beat us into a state of sponsorableness. Okay, yeah, all right. And it says, sometimes this was a tedious process. DUIs, losing the houses, families, teeth, getting locked up, cut up, stitched up. Tedious process, years. Some of us die during that tedious process. God has saved us all of that death. We're here tonight. Tedious process, okay? So we hope no one will be prejudiced, there he goes again, for as long as we, as some of us were. Now, you would think after all this we'd be done. But he knows there's some doubting Thomases and naysayers in here, so guess what? He ain't going to let you go. He goes on to say, the reader may still ask himself, why should I believe in a power greater than themselves? Well, we think there are some good reasons. Let's look at them. The practical individual of today is a stickler for facts and results. Nevertheless, 20th century, ready to accept all kinds of, accept theories of all kinds, provided they are firmly grounded in fact. We have numerous theories about, for example, about electricity. Everybody believes them without a murmur of doubt. Why this ready acceptance? Simply because it is impossible to explain what we see, feel, direct, and use. Isn't that a beautiful description of God, too? Yeah. What we see, what we feel, direct, and use. Okay? Without reasonable assumption as a starting point. Everybody nowadays believes and scores an assumption with there's good evidence, but no perfect visual proof. And does not science demonstrate that the visual proof is the weakest proof? It is constantly revealed that as mankind studies the material world, the outward appearances are not inward reality at all. That's about humans too, y'all. That old spiritual axiom, a wolf in sheep clothing. Outward appearances do not equal winner inward realities. Oh, is that what they say? You can't judge a book by its cover. Yeah, I get that. I get that, okay? The prosaic, and that is a heavy, flat, commonplace, dull, ordinary. The prosaic steel girder is a mass of electrons whirling around around each other at incredible speed. These tiny bodies are governed by precise laws, and these laws hold true throughout the material world. Science tells us so. We have no reason to doubt it. When, however, well, somebody gave me another drink, thank you. Okay, when it suggests that underneath all the material world and life, we see that there is an all-powerful, guiding, creative intelligence right there. A perverse streak comes to the surface, and we laboriously set out to convince ourselves it wasn't so. Obviously, in other words, we want to keep a closed mind. We read wordy books and indulge in windy arguments, thinking we believe that the universe needs no God to explain it. Were our contentions, and that's a situation or a statement that somebody argues to be true, quarrel, disport, or controversy, dispute, or controversy. Were our contentions true, it would mean life originated out of nothing, means nothing, and proceeds nowhere. That's a beautiful description of an active alcoholic when he's drinking. Nowhere man. Remember that song? Okay. Instead of regarding ourselves as intelligent agents, spearheads of God's ever-advancing creation, capital C, we agnostic and atheists chose to believe that our human intelligence was the last word, the alpha and the omega, the beginning of it all. Rather vain of us. Well, I would say so. Okay. It says, we who have traveled this dubious path, and by the way, that a dubious means skeptical, suspicious, okay, beg of you to lay aside prejudices, once again, even against organized religion. We have learned that whatever the human frailties of various faiths may be, those faiths have given purpose and direction to millions. In other words, what he's saying, don't throw the baby out with the dirty bathwater. One bad apple doesn't spoil the whole bunch, contrary to what maybe some of us may believe or see. He goes on to say, people of faith have a logical idea what life's about. People of faith have a logical idea what life is all about. Actually, we used to have no conception, whatever. We used to amuse ourselves cynically dissecting spiritual beliefs, not religious, when we might observe that many spiritually minded, not religious, persons of all races and colors and creeds were demonstrating a degree of stability, happy, and usefulness, which we should have sought ourselves. Never forget being laying in the ditch on Sunday morning, broke, tore up, all kinds of trouble, and making fun of people going to church in a nice car, all dressed up, going out. I said, look at those losers. Come on, y'all. Yeah. That might be another question. Why don't you? Have you ever been in a ditch? Yeah, okay. Okay. Where were we? Oh, yes. You can't believe in something until it happens to you. I'll give you an example. You can't believe in sunburn until you get burned, baby. And I've been burned so bad by sunburn one time that I almost had to go to the hospital. And guess what? After that happened, I believed in sunburn. I didn't believe in alcohol until I got drunk. Can't believe in something until it happens. It's the same thing with this God fella, spiritual waking, spiritual experience. Okay? Then guess what? Then you will believe when it happens on there. Okay, so obviously, goes on to say, instead, we looked at human defects of these people, and sometimes we use their shortcomings as a basis of wholesale condemnation. We talked of intolerance when we are intolerant ourselves. We miss the reality of the beauty of the forest because we're diverted from the ugliness of the trees. We never gave the spiritual side, not religious, of life a fair hearing. So powerful, this next paragraph about why these stories are in here and what they really mean. Remember, our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. It's not what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. That is not Alcoholics Anonymous. That is not in this book. Here's the stories and the reason they are. It says, in our personal stories, okay, and that's Bill's story and the stories in the back of the book, you will find a wide variation in the way each teller approaches and conceives of the power which is greater than himself. Okay, it says, whether we agree with that particular approach or conception seems to make little difference. Experience has taught us that these are matters for our purpose we need not be worried. These are questions for each individual to settle for himself. In other words, your own conception of God. And when he was talking about when that conceives of that power, on page 29, remember, he talked about that relationship with God. Okay, he just brought that forward. That's what they are. Now it goes on. All of these. On one proposition, however, these men and women strikingly agreed. Every one of them, not some, not most, not a lot, not quite a few, every one of them has gained access to and believes in a power greater than himself. This power, not they, remember, lack of power was our lemma, page 45. He's stating 5 pages later. This power, in each case, is accomplished and miraculous than humanly impossible. As a celebrated American statesman said, put it, let's look at the record. And by the way, that was a guy by the name, this American statesman that they were talking about, was Alfred Emanuel Smith, 4-time governor of New York. He was the first unsuccessful Catholic to run for president. He tried to run in 1928, got beat, and then got beat again in 1932. And a good thing he did in that, because Hoover got it, and we know what happened with the Depression and all that. He would have got blamed for that. So, here's what he says. Here are thousands of men and women worldly and deal. Indeed, they flatly declare that since they've come to believe, step 2, in a power greater than themselves, and take a certain attitude towards that power, make a decision in step 3, and to do certain simple things, step 4 through 12. Process. Believe, decide, act, bingo. What happens, okay? There has been a revolutionary change in their way of living, not drinking, and thinking. Spiritual awakening, spiritual experience, okay? See what he's doing again and again and again. Okay, in the face of collapse and despair, in the face of total failure of their human resources, they found a new power, peace, happiness, and a sense of direction. Talking about a set of promises. Come on, y'all. New power, peace, happiness, and a sense of direction. Isn't that why we drank to begin with? Isn't that what alcohol did for us? You bet. So I got it. I got to switch the powers here. Okay. Now listen to what it says. It says this happened soon after they wholeheartedly. Oh, the result was nil until we let go. Absolutely. We beg you to bear us and throw it from the very start. Absolutely. Remember, he's getting this wholeheartedly. Met a few simple requirements. What is that? The 12 steps. Okay. Once confused and baffled, I'll remember the baffled lot on page 23 and the baffling peach feature on page 34. Okay. By the seeming futility of existence, they showed the underlying reasons why they were making heaven going of life, leaving aside the drink question and telling us why living was so unsatisfactory. They showed how the change came over them. Not how they changed, how the change, spiritual awakening, spiritual experience, that changed them. They didn't do it. The experience did. And God, lack of power, everything that we talked about. When many hundreds of people are able to say that the consciousness of the presence of God today is the most important factor in their lives, they present a powerful reason why they should have faith. So now he's going to go on to say, just in case if we didn't get it. So, it says, the world of ours has made more material progress in the last century than millenniums before. Almost everyone knows the reason. Studying of ancient history tells us that the intellect of men of those days was equal to the best of today. Yet in ancient time, material progress was painfully slow. The spirit of modern scientific inquiry, research, and invention was almost unknown. In the realm of the material, men's minds were fettered by superstition, tradition, and all sorts of fixed ideas. What he's saying is, look what the closed mind did in the material world. A closed mind will do the same in the spiritual world. And that's what's blocking us. So we're superstition, tradition, all sorts of fixed ideas that were bad. Says some of the contemporaries of Columbus thought around Earth preposterous. Others came near putting Galileo to death for his astronomical heresies. So obviously, he says, we ask ourselves this. Are not some of us just as biased or prejudiced and unreasonable about the realm of spirit as some of the ancients were about the realm of material? Of course we were. He goes on to say, even in the present century, American newspapers were afraid to print an account of the Wright brothers. And that was in 1903, by the way. The first successful flight at Kitty Hawk. Had not all the efforts at flight failed before? Did not Professor Langley's flying machine go to the bottom of the Potomac River? It did, and that was in 1903, too, by the way. And Columbus and the Wright brothers did the same thing. HTC, the six things. Ain't going to go through it, but guess what? They did all that, and they end up getting the results. And when they flew the second time, the Wright brothers did it on faith, not on belief. When Columbus went back to the New World on the second time, he did it on faith, not on belief, because he went through this process, HTC, how to change. So that's what he went. And it says, was it not true that the best mathematical minds have proved man could never fly? Had people said God had reserved this privilege to the birds? Only 30 years later, the conquest of air was almost an old story, and airplane travel was in full swing. But in most fields, our generation had witnessed complete liberation of our thinking. Show any longshoreman a Sunday supplement describing the proposal to explore the moon by the means of a rocket, he will say, I bet they do it. Maybe not so long either. Is not our age characterized by the ease which we discard old ideas for new, by complete readiness by which we throw away the theory or the gadget which does not work for something which does work? So obviously he's telling us once again to use the same type of thing that we take for granted with God. I'm going to go ahead and say it, as strange as it may sound, and this is with God. And it's the same thing with the world that we're living in. Thank God we're in this part of the world and we're living spoiled and we're living rotten. The more dependent we are on these things, the more independent we are. The more dependent I'm on God, the more independent I am. It's one of those paradoxes that don't make sense. It's the same thing. Look at all this stuff. that we have, we depend on it, but guess what? We're independent. And it's the same thing with God. The more I depend on him, the freer I am. Doesn't make sense, okay? So, I love this page. If you want to test on how sober you are, besides asking your loved ones and the people you work with, these are the questions. Careful now, it goes like this. We had to ask ourselves, why shouldn't we apply our human problems the same readiness to change our point of view? We're having trouble with personal relationships. Wait. Personal relationships, that's with you, that's with me, and with God. If I'm having problems with personal relationships, I am off the beam. Untreated alcoholism or sobriety. Item number one. We couldn't control our emotional natures. Always pissed off, always angry, always complaining. I'm going to go ahead and say it. Always bitching, always crying, whatever you do. Can't control it. Okay? I'm in trouble. Okay? We were prey to misery and depression. Poor me, poor me, pour me a drink. You don't understand. The world's treating me so... come on, y'all. All right? And it says, we couldn't make a living. Guess what? You can have all the money in your world, the best job in your world, but are you making a living with yourself, with your fellow man, with God, okay? We had a feeling of uselessness, full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. Was not the basic solution to these bedevilments more important than whether we see the newsreel of lunar flight? Of course it was. So now he's going to give you the answer to your sobriety or untreated alcoholism, page 52. Okay? And here it is. When we saw others solve their problems, plural, by a simple reliance, now we're talking dependence and reliance, okay? Upon what? Upon the spirit of the universe, God. We had to stop doubting the power of God. Our ideas didn't work, but the God idea did. So, if you believe the same, you'll stay the same. If you believe in change, then you'll change. Things don't change until we do. Whatever you believe, you become. That's called the Pygmalion effect. If you believe you're a loser, then you are. If you believe you're a winner, then you are too. All things happen in belief. And once again, like I said, whatever you believe, it is. You believe, you receive. If you doubt, you go without. Okay. Now, it's real, real simple on here. Belief needs to turn into reliance, then faith, then the proof is there. It doesn't happen any other way. Okay, he goes on to say, the Wright brothers' almost childish faith that they could build a machine which would fly was the mainspring of the accomplishment. Without that, nothing could have happened. We agnostic and atheists were thinking the idea that self-sufficiency would solve our problems. When others showed us that the gods sufficiently worked with them, we began to feel like the Wright brothers who insisted the Wright brothers could never fly. He's going back and forth. I mean, he is closing the door where I don't have any other option. He goes on to say, logic is great stuff. We liked it. We still like it. It is not chance we were given the power to reason, to examine the evidence of our senses and draw conclusions. Guess who gave that to you? God did. Okay? It says, this is one of man's magnificent attributes. Guess what? No other animal on this planet's got it. But we do, because God gave it to us, okay? And it says, we agnostically inclined would not feel satisfied with the proposal that did not lend itself to reasonable approach and interpretation. Hence, we are at pains to tell why we think our present faith is reasonable, why we think it's more sane and logical to believe than not to believe, why we say our former thinking was soft and mushy when we threw up our hands in doubt and said, we don't know. This next paragraph is life-changing. So many times people say, I'm struggling, I'm off the beam, I'm having this, I'm having that. Is it step 11? Is it step 10? Is it the amends? Is it the inventory? Is it the third step? It's right here. These are life-changing, and these need to be answered. To thine own self be true, from our heart, not our head. Life-changing. Everything I think, everything I decide, everything I do can and will be changed by these questions. When we became alcoholics, crushed by a self-imposed crisis. I'm going to set the table for you. The self-imposed crisis is I made myself alcoholic. It wasn't mommy. It wasn't daddy. It's not the color of my skin. It's not my age. It's not how much money. It's not my religion. It's not all that crap. Self-imposed crisis. I made myself alcoholic. My alcoholism is mine. Stay tuned, because guess what? That's what we find out, okay? And the real self-imposed crisis is once I made myself alcoholic, there wasn't a damn thing I could do about it. Remember self-knowledge, fear, willpower, all the things that we mustered up. It's a double whammy. I made myself alcoholic, and once I became alcoholic, I couldn't fix myself. And we're sitting around here trying to make ourselves better, and we're getting sicker. We're throwing more of the problem on the problem. Remember we talked about last week, I can't solve a problem with a mind that created the problem. It's impossible to do. You know who said that? Einstein. Yeah, pretty smart guy. He says, you can't solve a problem with a mind that created it. And guess what? Since I created my alcoholism, because we find out later that selfishness, self-centered, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity, 402 forms of a spiritually sick alcoholic, it's me. So that's a self-imposed crisis. So we could not postpone or evade. We had, not should, could, ought to, fearlessly face the proposition that God is everything or else he's nothing. There is no gray area. Everything or nothing. That means that ceiling tire, this book, this shirt, this guy sitting here, this girl, everything. Not some things, not most, not a lot. Either he's everything or else he's nothing. I don't have the option to decide. That's what it says. It goes on to say, he either is or he isn't. What was our choice to be? So when life is hell in a handbasket, guess what? God isn't everything. I am. I've made it that way. Once again, that's why it says later on, first of all, we had to quit playing God. So, it's real simple, okay? Either be God or believe in God. Either he is or he isn't. And either I do this or I die. That's how the old timers gave it to me. They opened this page up and said, it's real simple, kid. Either he is or he isn't. What's your choice going to be? If he is, you're going to live. If he ain't, you're going to die. Thank God they did. Right there. There is no guesswork. So faith is the confirmation of things that we do not see and the conviction of their reality. And by the way, this praying thing and where we're at with the faith and all that, repetition confirms and strengthens habits. I'm going to go ahead and say that. Repetition confirms and strengthens habits, which gives us results, then faith comes. And the habits we're talking about is prayer and what this process is. The barf, if you're on the slow thing, if you want to do the six thing, whatever, it's the same process. That's what we're talking about. So he goes on. What was our choice to be? Arrived at this point. What point? We just got done telling you. That point, okay? We could squarely confronted the question of faith. We couldn't duck the issue. Some of us had already walked over the bridge of reason towards the desired shore of faith. The outlines of the promise of the new land had brought luster, which is shiny, bright, or beautiful, to the tired eyes and fresh courage of flagging spirits. That's weakening or dropping. Friendly hands had stretched us out in welcome. We were grateful that reason brought us so far, but we somehow couldn't quite step ashore. Perhaps we had been leaning too heavily on reason the last mile, and we did not like to lose our support. That was natural, but let us think a little more closely without knowing it. Had we not been brought word to where we stood by a certain kind of faith? Did we not believe in our own reasoning? Did we not have confidence in our ability to think? What was that but some sort of faith? Yes, we had been faithful abjectly, and that is lowest degree, miserable or wretched, faithful to the God of reason. So one way or another, we discovered that faith had been involved all the time. We had faith, but it was in the wrong thing. Ourselves, him, her, alcohol, money, sex, power, whatever your deal was. Everything but God. And that's how we ended up here. So he goes on to say, we found too that we had been worshipers. What a state of male goose flesh that used to bring on. Had we not variously worshipped people, sentiments, things, money, and ourselves? And then with some better motive, had we not worshipfully beheld the sunset, the sea, or a flower? Who of us had not loved somebody or something? How much did these feelings, these loves, these worships have to do with pure reason? Little or nothing. Don't tell her that. We saw it last. Were not these things the tissue out of which our lives were constructed? Did not these feelings, after all, determine the course of our existence? It was impossible to say that we had no capacity for faith or love or worship. In one form or another, we had been living by faith and little else. He's closing the door on us now. He says, imagine life without faith. We would have nothing but pure reason and it wouldn't be life. But we believed in life. Of course we did. We could not prove life in the sense that you can prove a straight line in the shortest distance between two points, yet there it was. Could we say the whole thing was nothing but a mass of electrons created out of nothing, meaning nothing, whirling around in destiny of nothingness? Of course we couldn't. The electrons themselves seem to have more intelligence than that. At least so the chemist said. So obviously we find out that we worship things and we had faith all along, just not in the right things. And we find out that reason isn't always right or complete. Neither is proof, because it is limited by our mind. And it says, hence, we saw that reasoning isn't everything. Neither is reason, as most of us use it, entirely dependable, though it emanate from the best of our minds. How about the people that prove man could not fly? So, obviously, what we're going to do here is we're uncovering, rediscovering, bringing out, and removing the things that block us from this God, this soul, this guiding force that we're going to talk about. He goes on to say, yet we have seen another kind of flight, a spiritual, not religious, liberation from this world. People who rose above their problems, plural, alcoholism, not just drinking. They said God made that possible, made these things possible. We only smiled. We had seen spiritual relief. So now, we are as confused about where God is as whose God is when we get here. Talked about that from the beginning and looking for God in all the wrong places. Somebody gave me the story, which makes a lot of sense. The three wise men from the East, nobody take it personal. We're not talking New York or New Jersey. We're talking Far East anyhow. They decided to steal from man the crown of life, the thing that everybody wants, the ultimate happiness, peace of mind, serenity, all the goody-goodies in life. The most important thing. They stole it from mankind, and they were going to hold it ransom. So they had to hide this thing, the crown of life. The first wise man says, I know where we'll hide it. We'll take it to the highest mountain range and find a crevice. We'll put it up there, and they'll never find it. The other two said, no, you know them. They're cunning, baffling, powerful. They'll find it. Second one says, all right, we'll go to the deepest ocean. They got a biggest crevice down there. We'll put it down there. The other two said, no, you know them. Cunning, baffling. They're smart. They'll find it. Third one says, I know where we'll put it, and they'll never find it. We'll put it deep down inside every man, woman, and child. So obviously, that's where we're talking about. And he goes on to say, and this is just one of the most beautiful parts of this book in this chapter, and almost done. Actually, we were fooling ourselves, for deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. It may be obscured, by calamity, by pomp, by worship of other things, but in some form or another, it's there. He tells us on page 13, 64, 71, and 72, it's obscured. God ain't, well, he is out there. Remember, he's everything or he's nothing, but the one that we're looking for, the personal God, is, listen where it is, okay? It says, for faith and power greater than ourselves and miraculous demonstrations of the power of human lives are facts of the old man itself. We finally saw that faith in some kind of God was a part of our makeup, just as the feeling we had for a friend. Sometimes we had, not should, could, ought to search fearlessly. Oh, that's right. We made a searching and fearless moral inventory. That's why I do that inventory. It's to get rid of the crap that's blocking the God inside of me. I get it. We had to search fearlessly, but he was there. He was much as a fact as we were. We found the great reality, capital G, capital R, God, deep down within us. In the last analysis, it's only there that he may be found, and so it was with us. We can only clear away the ground a bit if our testimony helps sweep away prejudice, old ideas, enables you to think honestly, encourage you to search diligently. Oh, that's right. We do that in step 4. We do it in step 10, where we continue to take personal inventory. You do it in step 11. Oh, I get it. That's, well, oh, okay. I'm starting to see, okay? And it says, within yourself, then if you wish, you can join us on the broad highway. By the way, he's going to mention the highway again on page 75, so stay tuned. It's a great, great highway to be on. And there is no toll road on there, but there is, okay? It says, with this attitude. What attitude? Well, I'll tell you what, on page 570 tells us, but we'll save that for another time. It says, you cannot fail. The consciousness of your belief is sure to come. So, inside of us, there's a personal God. Inside of us, there's some form of knowledge. And it, you call it a soul, innate, intelligent, guiding force. I don't care what you call it, but it's there. And guess what? It seems to be able to tell us what we should do and shouldn't do. And it tells us how we should live and shouldn't live. Seems to be able to tell us how to treat our fellow man or not how to treat our fellow man. Like I said, call it innate, intelligent, common sense, soul, guiding force, conscious, whatever you want. But stay tuned because that's what we developed, that sixth sense of guiding force. No matter what name it is, we realize it's there. If that's true, which it is, that means I have my own personal God. I don't have to worry about a religious God, your God. I can come together with God in certain understandable terms. Now with these new ideas, this chapter, I am ready to make that decision next week. But based on those old ideas, hellfire and brimstone, obviously, I never could have made that decision. And he will always, everything in as it is, he will give us an example. He went through all of this, and now he's going to put some flesh and bones and life and blood, and this is a real guy. So everything that we heard about, he's going to finish up with a story. An example, proof of the pudding. Experience. Now, how beautiful it is. Here it is. Okay. He goes on to say, in this book, you will read an experience of a man who thought he was an atheist. His story is so interesting that some of it should be told now. His change of heart was dramatic, convincing, and moving. Psychic change, spiritual awakening, spiritual experience. This guy happens to be John Henry Fitzball, male, called Fitz, New York, AA number 3. His story is called Our Southern Friend. And here it goes. Our friend was a minister's son. He attended church school where he became rebellious and what he thought an overdose on religious education. For years, he was thereafter, he was dogged by trouble and frustration, business failure, insanity, fatal illness, suicide. These calamities in his immediate family embittered him, depressed him. Post-war disillusionment, ever more serious alcoholism, impending mental and physical collapse brought him to the point of self-destruction. Sounds like a real alcoholic of the hopeless variety. One night, when confined in the hospital, he was approached by an alcoholic who had known a spiritual experience. Once again, Appendix 2, and this guy who approached him happens to be Bill Wilson. What a surprise. Anyhow, our friend's gorge rose as he bitterly cried out, if there's a God, he certainly hasn't done anything for me. But later, alone in the room, he asked himself this question. Is it possible that all those religious people have known are wrong? While pondering the answer, he felt as though he lived in hell. Then, like a thunderbolt, a great thought came to him and crowded all else. Who are you to say there is no God? This happens to be in the second paragraph, third edition, page 504. And it says, this man recounts that he tumbled out of bed to his knees. In a few seconds, he was overwhelmed by the conviction of the presence of God, capital P, capital G. It poured over and through him with certainty and majesty of a great tide of flood. Okay, the barriers, old ideas, prejudice, bias, everything we're talking about, he had built through the years were swept away. He stood in the presence of infinite power and love. He stepped from the bridge to shore. For the first time, he lived in conscious companionship with his creator, capital C. Listen to what he says this whole time. Thus, our friend's cornerstone, remember, now we get it, second stone of the spiritual awakening, spiritual structure that he's building. Step 2. our cornerstone fixed in place. Listen to what happened. No later vicissitude, which is changing lives, ups or downs, difficulty, has shaken it. His alcoholic problem, mental obsession, okay, was taken away that very night, and it disappeared. Save for a few brief moments of temptation, the thought of drink has never returned. At such times, a great revulsion has risen up to him. Oh, I think he was came to believe that a power greater than himself restored him sanity. Indeed, it did. And it said, seemingly, he could not drink if he would. God had restored his sanity. Not so obviously, we know that. What is this but a miracle of healing? Yet its elements are simple. Remember, elements of healing are the 12 steps, simple but not easy. Circumstances made him willing to believe. Step 2. He humbly offered himself to his maker. Step 3 that he knew. Even so, God has restored us all, not some, not most, not a lot, not quite a few, to our right minds. To this man, the revelation was sudden, spiritual experience. Some of us grow into it more slowly. That is the spiritual awakening that most of us have, okay? But he, talking about God, has come to all, not some, not most, not quite a few, who have honestly sought him. Remember, it's in seeking, not in finding. When we drew near to him, he disclosed himself to us. So, now we know. After this, we can look at the powerlessness. We can look for the need of power. Now I can make that decision, go on with the program of action. Don't have to stay powerless anymore. Simple but complete spiritual information. It takes a spiritually bankrupt person such as myself, gives me a starting place, gives me a procedure to follow, and tells us what we're going to have to find, what we're going to find in the end. I could not have made this decision without this chapter. It's the most simple but most complete process to get a conception of God that works. So, Bill put this chapter here to give us some new ideas. And here's where we're at as we're closing up as I'm reading this. This is where we're at. We stand at the turning point. Bill put this chapter here to give me new ideas so I could find the power of God, make that decision, and get on with the rest of the program. Without this chapter, I am sunk up the creek without a paddle. So if you're having trouble with God or belief, please read and reread on that basis of old ideas, get some new ones, and do the process. All I have to do is think about it and wonder about it. By thinking and wondering and doing what it said, God will reveal himself within me. Okay, but we got a lot more to do. If it's true, there's a voice within me, which there is, that tells me to do what I'm going to do that's wrong. How many times I did it in the past, there was a voice in there that said, Harmon, you better not do it. I would say, man, no, I'd go ahead and do it. And I'd get in a hell of a shape. And that same voice would come back and said, I told you so, and that was God, okay? If that's true, there's a voice in me that tells me when I'm going to do something good, and the opposite has to be true. Therefore, the God that's within me will direct my life, but I got to get to that. One last thing about this, and we are here. Road chart to decision. As corny as it may be. Step 1, the problem, lack of power, allergy, mental obsession, spiritual malady. Step 2, the solution, fellowship that supports the spiritual awakening, spiritual experience of the power. And we are at the turning point. Decision. Step 3, here's where we're at next week. I can disbelieve, continue drinking, insanity or death, or on the right side, believe, accept spiritual help, sanity, and sobriety. One last story real quick about this, and thank you for the extra couple minutes. About the idea, about the fundamental idea being every man, woman, and child. It's true. I was confirmed atheist, agnostic, as you would ever believe. Different story for a different day. I had 3 near-death experiences when I was drinking. And I'll be damned if these words didn't come out of my mouth and I was screaming 2 out of the 3. You know what those words were? God, help me. That old saying, there are no atheists in foxholes. That's true. And I tell you the fundamental idea born every man, woman, and child. Got 8 grandkids. Real good story. Aiden, our oldest one, I'm down at Dr. Bob's and doing a thing down there, involved with that. Anyhow, nobody was around. I was trying to explain to him what Dr. Bob was in the house and tried to explain that a rotary phone is a WW dot and a typewriter is the computer. And anyhow, it was a good deal. But explained to him that he was a doctor and he suffered from a disease and he was dying. And a man came and helped him and they found the solution. Papa has the same disease as Dr. Bob. Dr. Bob, and they get the doctors because they go get the shots and they'll get all that. Dr. Bob saved Papa's life. So it was time to go, and we had somewhere else to go, strapped me in the car. We were driving down. I don't even think I got off of Ardmore, just getting on Exchange Street. He said, "Hey, Papa." I said, "Yeah, what's up?" He says, "You know where Dr. Bob is?" That was a good question. I didn't have the answer. I said, "No, where is he?" He says, "He's in heaven saving people like you." Now, I said, "Did your mama teach you that?" That's Andrew, our oldest daughter. He says, "No." I said, "Did Nana, my wife?" I said, "Did she teach you that?" He goes, "No." I said, "How did you know that?" He says, "I don't know. I just knew it." You know why? The fundamental idea in God is in that kid. And I'm here to tell you, those kids teach me more about God than I ever will. Grandson number two. It's a great time of the year, Ash Wednesday, whatever. We're Catholic. I told you about that. Anyhow, in the bulletin, there's a picture of Jesus, not on a Good Friday. It's a Good Friday, but it was a bad Friday for Jesus. Noah goes, "Hey, Papa." I said, "Yeah." He goes, "He must have been really bad." Pointing down to Jesus on the cross. I said, "Well, what do you think?" I said, he goes, "Look, he's in timeout." So anyhow, out of the mouth of babe, he was in timeout, all right? So, but that's what I'm saying. The fundamental idea of God is born in every man, woman, and child. All I have to do is go through this process, the barf, the six things, and then now, finally, I can make a decision to turn my will, my thinking. Your will is no more than your thinking, your mind, your direction. It's so important. I can make a decision to turn my will and life over to the care and direction to God as I understand him or my conception of. Now I'm ready to go. Once I got done with that, I could not wait to get my hands out of an idiot. Me, okay? To have somebody that's got all the power, all the things that we're talking about. So how about if we close with the Lord's Prayer and we'll see you next week. From January till now, that quiet place, we know who and what's in that quiet place and where we go to pray the serenity prayer from our heart instead of saying it from our head. So last week really put that practice in at a new, deeper level and layer, if you will. So if we can. God, grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Beautiful. And one other prayer that we've been saying is a set-aside prayer. And once again, after last week, it was so powerful when he talked about prejudice. And we know old ideas that block us from what we need to know. And bias and all the things of a closed mind or somebody who thinks they have all the knowledge. We've established that most of us come here knowing enough about AA and alcoholism to be dangerous to ourselves. What we think we know can be a liability and not an asset. And we come with basic ideas that are incorrect and basic knowledge. So this prayer is called the set-aside prayer and can be specific. And actually, as it's been unfolding this year, I've had four versions that have been dropped in my lap. Anyhow, personally experienced, I can plug in about the book, the steps, God, myself, and you fill in the blanks. Anyhow, this is the one that we'll use tonight. God, please help me set aside everything I think I know about myself, everything I think I know about my illness, these steps, and especially you, for an open mind and a new experience with myself, my illness, these steps, and especially you. And last but not least, before we go ahead and get going on that, out of this book called The 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, We've taken a paragraph out of there as our mission statement, goal, mantra, what we're trying to achieve, and it goes as follows. AA's 12 steps are a group of principles, spiritual in nature, which, if practiced as a way of life, can expel the obsession to drink and enable the sufferer to be happily and usefully whole. We call that a recovered alcoholic, spiritual recovery, emotional sobriety, a lot of different things. And obviously in Appendix 2, when he uses the 13 different words for change. And that's what we're trying to accomplish through this big blue book here. So, now here's where we were at, obviously. We always start with something that Bill wrote. Bill wrote this in the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, 17 years sober. And it goes as follows. Willingness is the key. No matter how much one wishes to try, exactly how can he turn his own will and his own life over to the care of whatever God he thinks there is? A beginning, even the smallest, is all that is needed. Once we have placed the key of willingness in the lock and have opened the door ever so slightly, we find that we can always open it some more. Though self-will may slam it shut again, as it frequently does, it will always respond to the moment we pick up the key of willingness. So, we've coined this, and we will visit this again in step six, and really with all these steps, there's a pretty simple prayer, but it's loaded too, because comes with this prayer, my personal experience sometimes is pain, and it would be as this. God, please help me be willing to be willing to be willing. Sounds redundant, but careful what you pray for, because usually pain is the touchstone to willingness. In other words, God, please help me be willing for the willingness to be willing. I promise you, you pray those in the morning, your life will change. Get back to me and don't cuss me. All right, now, along that vein too, remember in Bill's story, the four types of willingness. We had willingness, we had complete willingness, we had humble willingness, and entire willingness. And I guarantee you and I promise you, those are four different types of willingness and is a requirement for this recovery. It's a powerful, powerful thing. So, somebody says, what is this frog, F-R-O-G? Well, this is a frog right here. Thank you very much. Very one of the few things. And actually, somebody gave me a, what do you call this? A little wrist thing, but it fits right around his neck, so I can do that. So what that stands for, and this is where we're going, fully relying on God. Or forever relying on God. And I'll be darned, he's in here who gave this to me, and that's what it says, F-R-O-G, I don't know where he got this, and it says fully relying on God. So, now, keep this feller in mind because we will see him again in a few weeks and we'll see what the final thing that we talk about our frog on there. Now, also we have some novel ideas over here. We have the word decision versus commitment. And thank you, Chris. I had a typo and that's never been my forte. We have this thing called will. We have this thing called life. And we have this thing called self-will. And we have this here, which we'll explain. And then you might want to write these down. I think we'll even hand them out. 4, 5, 5, 6, and 6. And no, that is not the pick 6 or whatever your numbers are. No. I take that back. Give me your money and I'll play those for you. So anyhow, very, very important that we are aware of those. First of all, we're going to start before we get on with tonight, so we can't and won't stop at this, is the word decision. Webster's, by the way, and this is a dictionary that we have here. For display purposes, I prefer to use the collegiate one because it is a lot more in-depth, and a lot of times the meaning of the word is going to be in-depth in the collegiate versus this one, but this is better than none. Webster's definition of will, the act of deciding or settling a question, the act of making up one's mind, a judgment or conclusion, a determination. Now, we know a decision implies there's action to follow. Any decision is no good without action. Decision is one of the key words in all of the 12 steps and the book, because it represents the link between understanding and action. Indeed. So will means mind, thinking apparatus, the thing that tells us what to do or what not to do. Important part of will is direct or control, especially when we get to self-will and God's will, direct or control. Okay? Once again, Whipster says about this, will is a wish, a desire, inclination, something wished or ordered, especially by one with authority, power of consciousness and deliberate action or choice, attitude towards others, and of course this, a legal document stating one's wishes concerning the disposal of his property after death. It's by no mistake, it's called last will and testament. I go to an attorney, I say what I'm thinking, he writes it down, gets it notarized. That is my will, my thinking at that point in time. That's what it is, really simplified, but powerfully done. Life. This a lot of times is maybe too simple. It's no more than your will, all those things that we talked about, your thinking, put into action or motion. Your actions dictated by your thoughts. Webster says this one too, one's manner of living. So self-will, we got that underneath there too. Webster says identity, character of any person or thing, one's own identity, personality, and one's own welfare or interest. That last one really gets a lot of people going. So, now that we've gotten those out of the way, to bring us up to where we're at, so far, we've been shown the problem, the powerless condition in the doctor's opinion, the allergy, the obsession, and a little snippet of the spiritual malady. We were given an example of that in chapter one, or Bill's story. Chapter 2 is the solution, showing the solution to the problem. If the problem is powerless, then power is the solution. He talks about the power of the support group called Alcoholics Anonymous, and he talks about the power of the vital spiritual experience, spiritual awakening. Chapter 3, obviously, more about alcoholism, showed us exactly what will happen to us if we don't have that vital spiritual experience. If we don't, sooner or later, if you're a real alcoholic of the hopeless variety, the insanity will return, and I will drink. Last week, we agnostics, we were able to show us a power which we could come to terms with, our own conception, and perhaps live with, and now we can make a decision with this power. So we've been given all the information, see the problem solution, accept the idea of the solution. So now, by no mistake, it's how do we find this power? No coincidence that chapter 5 would be called How It Works. Obviously, how it works, personal experience, personal opinion on this, is some of the best spiritual information ever written, especially for us alcoholics. Bill called this a formula or proposals on how to find this power, which turned out to be the 12 steps. A little bit of history on how we got here, and it's really ties up a lot of loose ends for me and makes a lot of sense on this book and how it was constructed and how miraculous it is. Haven't said it yet, but it's real simple. 8A, Alcoholics Anonymous, is a gift from God. Don't know how else to say it. Some call it slender threads. I call it invisible threads. This thing we take for granted almost never made it. And obviously, if it never made it, we would never made it. Chances are we wouldn't be here together. So, a little bit of history, and we talked about it in a general way, but we're going to go ahead and talk about it in a little bit more specific. Here's how we got to where we're at tonight. Don't forget, AA was coming from the Oxford group, first century Christian movement, and they were very strong. No slackers who had fundamental ideas and values. They were very, very much concerned with the letter of the law. Bill instinctively knew from the beginning Alcoholics aren't going to be good with the letter of the law. He was more involved with the spirit of the law. And there's a big, big difference from the letter versus the spirit. Example of this, obviously, Oxford Group had these four things. And some people get really offended, especially on number six, the six asses. And somebody said, "Will you raise your hand?" I said, "There's so many asses in here, we ain't got enough." No, that's abbreviation for what we call assumptions. And here they are. I think you picked the wrong seat, dude. Sorry about you. Sorry about your luck, but that's what happens when you're there, right? So, this is how we got where we're at. If we could go ahead and get those out, I would appreciate it. The examples of this Oxford group and the letter of the law follows. And thank God, I'll say it, that we are in the cradle of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's so many people in the fellowship out of this area of Northeast Ohio, even. I'm talking Central Ohio, Southern Ohio. You get outside, and we're talking about A, the Oxford Group, and C, or B, these things that we're talking about. They have no idea. But when I know what this is and know where we came from, it makes sense. In other words, I can't know where I'm at unless I know where I've been. I can't know where I'm going unless I know where I'm at. Therefore, this is a crucial part of the understanding of the famous how it works in the book. First of all, they had the four absolutes, and that's what the four abs stand for. That's not something that you do, tighten up in the gym and all that. That's absolutes. That's, I abbreviated. And in case you haven't heard or your sponsor hasn't helped you with them, and personally, this is part of my morning meditation, part of the deal. The reason being, Dr. Bob was he was sold on these things, the four absolutes. He really, really believed. And he said, if you can answer yes to all four of these, it's God's will. If you can't, then it's not. Being an alcoholic, I looked at four absolute 12 steps. Now, if I'm stealing, I'll take the 12. If I'm working, then I'll do the four. So the four absolutes were a lot easier for me to grasp from the beginning, but they're more powerful today than in the beginning. And they are as follows. Absolute honesty. I love it when you're in a discussion meeting and somebody brings up honesty. It reminds me when I was locked up, all of us losers in the cage, we're all talking about what great criminals we are, but we're all locked up. It's like alcoholics talking about honesty. Oh, you don't know what, so anyhow. Absolute honesty. Simply said, is it true or it's false? There is no gray area. Lies don't come in sizes. They don't come in colors. They don't come in shapes. Either it's true or it's false. There is not a comma. There's not a hyphen. It's either true or false. Okay, next one. Absolute purity. Same thing. Either it's right or it's wrong. There is no gray area. I will pose that question. Is there ever a right reason to do something wrong? Is there ever a wrong reason to do something right? Okay. Next one would be absolute unselfishness. And of course, how will it affect the other fellow? And we know about that. And that's a big thing about tonight. Last but not least, absolute love. And we're not talking about that kind. We're talking about language of heart love. Is it ugly or is it beautiful? They asked Bill, why didn't you put the absolutes in the book? And Bill said, alcoholics can't be absolutely anything but drunk. So he knew from the beginning, they're in there, but they're not in there. Yeah, the principles, the ideas, and yes, they are mentioned, but not in that form because he knew. Next thing, they had the five C's. And that's what that is supposed to be, five C's. Four absolute five C's. And they were confidence. You got it right there. Confession, and that's not something that the police make you sign. Conviction, that's not what the judge do here or the jury. No. Conviction. Conversion, change. We talked about that. Spiritual awakening, spiritual experience, appendix 2. And continuance, five C's. Well, you want to see an alcoholic cut and run, put that in front of them, okay? Yeah, all right. Five procedures called soul surgery. And I borrow that. I call it 12-step soul surgery. But here's what the Oxford group said, soul surgery. Give into God. Listen to God's guidance. And here's what is a lost art in Alcoholics Anonymous. Check your guidance. Is that God talking or is that me talking in there? Yeah. Whose voice is that? Check your guidance. Restitution. Ain't not an alcoholic in the world that you're going to sign up for that until you have to, okay? And this is a good one. Sharing or telling one's sins. Five procedures. And I guarantee if you do that, that's going to be soul surgery, okay? And here's the six basic assumptions right here. You girls will love this one, okay? Men are sinners. That's women, too, so yeah. You'll like this one even better. Men can be changed. I swear if I marry him, I'll change him. Okay, no, that's not what they're talking about. This is another one. Confession is a prerequisite to change. Come on, y'all. I get it. Let me see. So if I do an inventory, admit to God, myself, and another human being, exact nature and wrong, step 6 and 7. Oh, okay, that's what I get it. So now I see. So you'll see the method of the madness. Now here's obligation and responsibility. The changed soul has direct access to God. The age of miracles have returned. Here's where we'll cut and run. Those have been changed must change others. A lot of power in that. The six tenets, and you'll see where Bill took these six tenets and expanded them, and we find out about the six-step program that we have that's underneath there, and then obviously our 12 steps, and we'll go through a real quick history of that. Surrender. Okay. Examination of our sins. Sharing, confession, restitution, receiving guidance from God. You can see that for an alcoholic is what an order. I won't go through with it, not I can't go through with it, okay? So, you can see from that morphed in your edition, it depends what book you're reading. We talked about it, but we're going to do it again. If you're doing the third edition, page 292. If you're doing the fourth edition, 263. Here's where the six-step program was. Number one, complete deflation. Number two, dependence and guidance from a higher power. Three, moral inventory. Four, confession. Five, restitution. Six, continued work with others. Absolute fascinating to have this information. And I promise you, which is not too easily done, if we take any or all of these as a way of life, God's going to change you by doing that. It's absolutely fascinating. And I found out that I could not go on without that. So, now that we have that, we're going to see, well, how that is. All those ideas, obviously, after the six-step program, the ideas and the tenets came early from AAs, and we got that. Bill knew that the tenets and absolutes would obviously be way too much for the alcoholic. Bill, once again, was interested in the spirit of the law, not the letter of the law. Since he knew all this, he was struggling to write how it works, which really would be inclusive of every alcoholic. He had the gift from the future even back then. And by the way, the third tradition that we love to beat each other up with is meant to be inclusive of every alcoholic, never exclusive of any alcoholic. We'll stop with that. But Bill knew this, that he had to write this proposal, this formula, that would be inclusive of every alcoholic. And it was starting to come in. In other words, the AA's first principle and first claim was, it works. So how it works really could be an analysis of AA, not be an analysis of AA, but more of a witness to AA or for AA. He was struggling to write this chapter. And if you ever get a chance and listen to his own words on this story, it's absolutely fascinating to hear it from his own words. There's enough tapes, CDs, whatever out there to listen to in his own written account on this. Anyhow, he was struggling to do this. He was being careful, and here's the history of it where we got it. When he was writing this part, there was three basic things or contingents in AA. One of them was the Akron Group. Much to our surprise right here, we, meaning led by Dr. Bob, was very religious, very spiritual in nature, wanted as much God and Bible in there as possible. The people in New York, you know those New Yorkers, I'm sorry, is anybody from New York here? They wanted more intellectual. They wanted more psychology, psychiatry stuff. And then we had the sane and sober voice in the middle, which Bill actually wrote about in the 12 Concepts. A novel concept in Alcoholics Anonymous is the thing called compromise. We had a group that said, well, yeah, we want enough God in there, but we don't want too much. I know it sounds like somebody that's sitting on the fence, but that's what it was. So obviously, you had the more intellectual agnostic and atheists in New York that wanted no God stuff. You wanted the Akron group that wanted as much biblical references and God stuff as possible. Then obviously you had the group said, let's talk about God, not just too much. Let's try to keep it in the middle. But here's where Bill was struggling. When he was writing about this, because in Alcoholics Anonymous, those Catholics were in here. I can say that. Some Jews, Muslims were coming in, and we were getting a little bit of everything in Alcoholics Anonymous. So, how could he pacify all of them without offending anybody? And he knew instinctively the sixth tenet of the Oxford group had loopholes. Much to your surprise, the alcoholic mind would wiggle out and wiggle through what we had. He knew he had to write something that closed the door, if you will, on the alcoholic mind, the way they think and the way we go. And God obviously used his mind as a vessel to do that. And obviously he knew the six-step program needed strength and needed more power. It's absolutely fascinating where you can see where he took the six tenets and the steps that it converts and where he got step one from, step two, and step, obviously, six and seven and ten. And it's an absolutely fascinating process, and we'll go with that. Anyhow, Bill's own words. He struggled and struggled and could not write this chapter. He gave up. He said a prayer and asked for guidance. And after 15 minutes of meditation with a pillow behind his back and a pencil, he wrote what we commonly know as How It Works in less than 30 minutes. His own words said, he said, it was as if the pencil had a mind of its own. So when he was done writing How It Works, he counted the proposals or the steps that he wrote. And much to his amazement, after numbering them, there were 12. He didn't set out to write 12 about it. And he was asked later on, is there any significance about 12? And he said, no, maybe the 12 apostles, or, you know, whatever. And he always kind of laughed it off. Odd or God, 12 steps, 12 traditions, 12 concepts. Anyhow, when the other members got a hold of the original How It Works, that's when, you know what, hit the fan. Here's how it was. He got done writing it that night. Howard and a new guy from the New York group, and they knew Bill was working on the book late at night, and he couldn't sleep, and he came over and knocked on the door. Lois Anson said, come on in. Bill just couldn't wait to show him what he did. He showed these guys, and the newcomer obviously didn't know nothing from nothing, but Howard, his undies got in a bunch. The reason being, he took the six steps and made them 12. That would make anybody restless, irritable, discontent. That would be like if you went back to your home group a week later and they said, we have changed the 12 steps to 24, I guarantee you there's going to be some discussion about that. So they didn't like the 12 steps, and we understandably why. Nobody likes change. Anyhow, Bill had doubled the damn steps. And they said, Bill, Moses only had 10 commandments. What are you giving us 12 for? It ain't going to work. So we're going to read the original How It Works, original manuscript. Got a four-year thing. And here's what's so amazing about this. Bill read this to Ruth, who typed this damn thing 44 times. And this was the final thing. This is how Bill wanted to write it. And the reason that I bring it in, because if we're not exposed and understand to it, the continuity of the book is broken up a little bit because Bill had a definite style. And there's a history on how and why we have How It Works now, which obviously we'll refer to. But this, I like this Oxford Group principles. It's so important when you see what this is. And my guys that I sponsor, we use some of the steps. And the third step, when he says care and direction, humbly on our knees, holding nothing back on step seven. You'll see where I'm going with. There is a little bit more stuff, more substance to it. And I'm not, you know, stepping out of the box. And, you know, I guess I am a little bit. But here's what it is, the history of it. It's absolutely fascinating. Because I believe, I'll speak for myself, if you go to enough meetings, you'll hear how it works. And you can become jaded. In other words, that's just background noise, background, you know, whatever's going on. And we can really kind of miss the punch, if you will, to this. So I'm going to go ahead and read this, and I'll try to change my voice, lower it, raise it, inflect it as how it was. And obviously, please note the differences. I've taken the liberty to circle these, and obviously, this is how Bill wanted to write it, but here's where the group, obviously, as we go, the groups kind of compromised and made Bill change it. So like I said, I will try to go ahead and do this. Okay. And it's absolutely fascinating if you'll do this as this is going out here. And if you'll keep in mind, obviously, we went from six tenets to the 10 steps. Once again, because they had loopholes that the alcoholic mind would wiggle through, needed more strength, and expanded them. Here's what's amazing when we read these steps. Remember, the first Oxford tenet was surrender to God. We know he changed that to step three, made a decision to turn our will and our life over to the care and direction of God. The second tenet was examination of sins. We know that's obviously the fourth step. The third and fourth tenet, sharing and confession. Obviously, we know that is admitted to God, to ourselves and another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. Restitution, he changed into two steps, making the list in step eight, making direct amends in step nine. And then sixth tenet was receiving guidance from God. That's 11 steps, sought through prayer, meditation, etc. So you're saying, where did the other steps come from? This is what I was telling you about how fascinating this is. Well, we've already found out where the first one came from. That's a guy called Dr. Silkworth, the doctor's opinion. Step one, added by Bill. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us the same. Well, we talked at length with that. Carl Jung, the psychiatrist over in Europe. Okay, and here's where it is right now. Here's where the power really comes. Step six and seven, he added to close loopholes. Step 10, he added to close loopholes. And then, of course, we know step 12, the great value of helping one alcoholic helping another. So it's absolutely fascinating how we went from the tenets to the six steps to our 12 steps. And it makes so much sense. Everything that we've been doing from January till now makes a whole lot of sense, and especially the way he wants to word it. So when we go over this and we'll see how Bill wanted to do it. It goes as follows. Rarely have we seen a person fail so they followed our directions. Those who do not recover are people who cannot, will not completely give themselves to the simple program. Usually men and women are constitutionally capable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a way of life, which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those who suffer from grave emotional illness disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to follow directions. At some of these, you may balk. You may think you can find an easier, softer way. We doubt if you can. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go. Absolutely. Remember that you are dealing with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for you. But there is one who has all power, that one is God. You must find him now. Half measures will avail you nothing. You stand at the turning point. Throw yourself under his protection and care with complete abandon. Now we think you can take it, okay? Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as your program of recovery. One, admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become manageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care and direction of God as we understand Him. Four, made a searching, fearless, moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted God, ourselves, another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely willing that God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly on our knees, ask Him to remove our shortcomings, holding nothing back. Eight, made a list of all persons we'd harmed, became willing to make complete amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory when we're wrong, probably admit it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our contact with God as we, with God, praying only for the knowledge of His will and the power to carry it out. 12, having had a spiritual experience as the result of this course of action, we tried to carry this message to others, especially alcoholics, and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many, or you may exclaim, what an order. I can't go through with it. Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we're willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, and by the way, that is in the doctor's opinion, some in chapters 2 and 3 in Bill's story. The chapter to the agnostic, chapter 4. Uh-oh, so I'm getting it now. It's from cover page to chapter 4, okay. And our personal adventures before and after. That's chapter 1, Bill's story, and the stories in the back of the book. So it's a whole book. Have been designed to sell you. Remember, he was a salesman, okay? Three pertinent ideas. A, that you are alcoholic and cannot manage your own life. Step one. B, that probably no human power can relieve your alcoholism. Step two. And C, that God can and will finish up of step two. Now, it says, if you are not convinced of these vital issues, remember we established what vital is, a matter of life and death, you ought to reread book to this point or else throw it away. Perfect. Okay.